Hello and welcome to Radio Edu Talk. I'm David Noble in Dalgety Bay in Fife, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Professor Heather Joshi, who's Emeritus Professor of Economic and Developmental Demography at the Institute of Education. And today we're going to be looking at some recent analysis that Heather's been involved in, looking at longitudinal studies around the topic of working mothers and cognitive abilities of their children. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Nice to be with you.
Okay. And could we just start, could you just give us some brief background to your career?
Well, in my early career, I worked in the Government Economic Service, and I returned to academia as a researcher in the 1980s. And in the 1990s, I joined the team that's now called the Centre for Longitudinal Studies and is now based at the Institute of Education. I was the director of this centre from 2003 to 2010, and within that I was the director of the Millennium Cohort Study from when it started in the year 2000 until 2011. I've now retired from my duties as a director, but I continue to work on research using the data that's collected from these big longitudinal studies.
And do you mind, Heather, maybe starting off by saying a little bit about, for example, the work of the Centre for Longitudinal Studies and possibly the Campaign for Social Sciences, who I know I've published some of your writing recently around the today's topic?
Yeah, well, the Centre for Longitudinal Studies manages three of the four national birth cohort studies. These are nationwide samples of children selected at birth or in infancy, and they have followed up through their school years and where enough time has elapsed into adulthood, and they're used for a large number of purposes, medical, social and educational, by a large number of social and medical scientists. The Campaign for Social Sciences is run by something called the Academy for Social Sciences, which is a kind of trade union for social scientists, and the campaign has been trying to promote the public interest and governmental interest in what we do and in the results of social science research that have applications of public interest. And the occasion on which I pulled these studies together was the launch of a booklet that the Academy of Social Sciences produced earlier this year, gathering together work in a number of fields by a number of researchers with illustrations of research that had implications and outcomes in policy decisions. And I chose the topic of mothers' employment and the outcomes for their children, because this is not only, I have found, as something of great interest to the members of the public and the press, but about 10 years ago, it was also of particular interest to politicians who were drawing up new policies for maternity leave and parental leave. And I actually did a study jointly with Harriet Harman, who was at that time out of government. We did a study together of the outcomes for children of the employment of mothers who were members of the two of the birth cohorts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was all rather out of date, so I thought I would put together the results of a number of studies over the years that had looked at the same issue from the early 1950s up to the present day, because I think putting it all together is much more interesting than picking out one set of associations on their own. I also picked the topic because it's a good illustration of what longitudinal data can be used for. You have information on a an adult woman, the mother, her antecedents, her abilities, her education, her employment, and you relate it to what happens to her child as the child grows up, goes to school, and develops in their school years, so that this is longitudinal in that we are comparing what happened in a child, the first year of a child's life, and what happens later on down the line. And this isn't the kind of survey that you can just do one-off. You need this prospective follow-up to establish what happens next.
And can you say a little about the studies that you looked at then, and your approach to analysing those studies, and ultimately, of course, what listeners will be interested in hearing about the conclusions that that you and your colleagues reached?
Okay, the studies that I pulled together, as far as studies in the sense of exercises which collect longitudinal data about mothers and their children, were the four national birth cohort studies, three of which are based at the Centre for Longitudinal Studies, that is, following births in 1946, 1958, 1970, and the millennium. And there were two further studies, the kind of offshoots from these, where we looked at children of the women who were born in 1970 and in 1958 to see how their children got on in the second generation when they went to school. So that's six studies based on national birth cohorts. And then there's a rather similar birth cohort study collected around the Bristol area. It's called Children of the 90s, or ALSPAC is its acronym. So there's a birth in the early 1990s, where there is data on their mother's employment when they were born and their attainments at school at Key Stage 1. And then the eighth study that I looked at is taking life histories out of the British Household Panel study, which a subsample of people who are followed in that study who were themselves born in the 1970s. There's information on their parents' employment at the time that they were born, and then there's information on how they entered the labour market and finished education around the year 2000. So in each case, there's some form of a comparison of how the child achieved or performed with what the mother was doing during the child's early years, usually mostly only in the first year of life, but in some studies it's before age five, and a number of other factors are controlled which may influence either why the mother was working or how the child would be getting on at school. And the pattern of results is that in the most recent studies of children born in the late 1990s or in the year 2000, there is no association between how the child gets on and what the mother was, whether the mother was in work in the child's early years. If you go back to people born in the 1970s, there are some indications of a small negative association between how the child performed or either at school or in their A-levels, and having had a working mother in their early years. And if you go further back to children born in 1946 and 1958, the associations are, again, quite weak. And what evidence we have from the 1946 cohort, which isn't as extensive as the others, was of no association detected. So the story I tell about this is that the context was changing from, certainly from the 1970s, that it became easier and more acceptable for mothers to have paid employment and indeed to have longer maternity leave as time went by. And that, so it's not surprising that in the past there was evidence of a small disadvantage to children whose mothers have been in paid work that has diminished or disappeared in the generally more favourable, friendly environment that more recent generations of children have been born into, and particularly it's mothers can take more time off than they used to be able to, and there are more options for combining parenthood and employment than there used to be, so there's less stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not surprising that the impact on children, if any, no longer seems to be apparent.
Clearly, the research that's taken place in the past has had implications for government policy. I think particularly, up until the millennium and maybe just beyond. But do you feel that your analysis is presently or is likely to contribute to policy discussions as we move forward, particularly maybe around government's attempts to improve work-life balance?
But I certainly don't claim to have changed the policy single-handed. I would claim to have offered evidence to the common sense proposition, which many politicians from now all parties in a feel that this is something that it's a sensible policy and that the public wants. And measures that would have been totally unthinkable 30 years ago are now approaching the statute book, such as the provisions for mothers and fathers to share their what would have been called maternity leave, the employment leave during the first year of life of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And the perception that mothers need to stay at home and don't have a place in the outside world has modified, and the perception that fathers maybe have a role to play at home has also modified, perhaps not a pace, but is moving in the opposite direction.
And you've written before about the changing times for mothers and a changing context, particularly between around about 1970 and 2000. But in your opinion, have there been further changes that have taken place maybe just in the last couple of years that you feel are going to maybe affect future results? And also, just I wonder whether are there plans to commence a new cohort that takes into account maybe the great societal changes that we feel have been happening in the last few years?
Well, can we take the first one first? There are changes that have happened since 2000 in terms of lengthening maternity leave, increasing leave for fathers, and the shared parental leave that's now under discussion, if not in Parliament, or approaching becoming policy. Also, recent developments, which are not quite so family-friendly or favourable, are the increasing costs of childcare, the increasing recognition of childcare as important and valuable and needing to be taken seriously is helpful, but the increasing costs to parents is a force moving in the opposite direction. Just generally, high levels of unemployment are not particularly helpful for families either. If neither parent can find work, that's no good for the children or for the parents. And there is no silver lining from my work to suggest that, well, at least if the parents can't get a job, the children will get better attention, because children of working parents seem to be doing perfectly fine if their parents have got jobs. So unemployment does not have any unintended benefit for children. On the contrary, it has unintended disadvantages for children as well as the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you asked about a new cohort. There is one in preparation. a very big UK-wide study called the LIFE study, which will survey a very large number, maybe up to 100,000 babies born probably in the year 2015. And they will be looking at these issues of parental employment and childcare, and they will be able to monitor how the children of the of this decade fare in relation to the, their home backgrounds and their parental circumstances. But this is not something I'm personally involved with. Mm-hmm. There is another study which your listeners might be interested in, which started, I think, in the mid-2000s. That's a particular cohort study in Scotland called Growing Up in Scotland, which has, is very like the Millennium Cohort study, but there are more Scottish children in it than there are in the Millennium Cohort. And that will be following Scottish children from birth and also some from kindergarten age into their schooling. So your listeners might be interested in keeping an eye on that study too.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to your analysis, you've spoken about other factors affecting the relationship, and you've touched on several already, but are things like mother's mental health and social expectations, how relevant are they?
Well, mother's mental health is in some circumstances a factor which it's not good for children if mothers are depressed, and in some circumstances not having a job exacerbates maternal depression. So that's in some, you know, it's difficult to generalize about all this, but yeah. Mother's employment may help mother's mental health and thereby help children. Social attitudes, if the attitudes are very critical of a mother going out to work, it's going to be more stressful for her. If the employers are not sympathetic to the fact that she's got parental responsibilities, or if her family is not sympathetic to her going out to work, the whole scene is more difficult for the mother and the child than in a circumstance where it's regarded as normal and not harmful and not something that the mother is expected to feel guilty about.
Mm-hmm. And other factors other than those around leave around the time of birth that are relevant with regards to father's employment?
Yes, there's a whole, well, there's a whole host of factors. If the attitudes soften up about women having parental responsibilities, they could also and may also soften up about men having family responsibilities and not just being solely breadwinners. And the extended paternity leave policies are addressed to giving couples more choice about how they divide their time between paid work and parenthood.
Mm-hmm. And it appeared in your analysis that there was, I'm trying to recall whether this was going back to the earlier studies, but there appeared to be some statistically significant findings relating to mothers who are in full-time employment.
Yeah. Where we didn't always know whether a mother who'd been employed in the early years was working full-time or not. But where we did know, the mothers who'd been working part-time did not show any adverse associations in their children's outcomes. It was just in full-time work that the adverse, if the mother had had a full-time job, that the adverse associations appeared. And we also found this pattern in American data of an American cohort, where full-time employment in the first year of life of mothers who had been working in the mid to late 1990s showed up in poorer cognitive skills in their children. And this is kind of all of the piece, because in America at that time, the maternity leave was much, much shorter, 6 weeks or so, if any. It had become, by the 1990s in Britain, so the women who were in paid work, in full-time paid work during their child's first year, or had quite often been, had no choice but to go back very early and full-time. And under those circumstances, it's not so surprising that we find some evidence of a negative impact on the children. If we compare the American families with the British families, where women were on the whole taking 7 or more weeks, months off work, the children seem to be better adjusted.
And just finally, Heather, there'll be many listeners will be interested to find out more, and if you could point us in a couple of directions, that would be really helpful. Just out of interest, how does the sharing and comparing of longitudinal and quantitative social research take place currently within the UK?
In the UK, almost all of these data sets are shared, are available to bona fide researchers through the UK Data Archive. So all researchers are at liberty to test the results or experiment on with their own hypotheses on these data resources, which are constantly being updated. This isn't just something, these are very big and complex data sets, so it requires a certain amount of resources and skills to dig into them. They need to be dug into, they can't just be dipped into. Yeah. But researchers are free to get hold of the data, and they also communicate with each other through learned societies, learned journals, through the Academy of Social Sciences, and a number of channels. And the results of the research on this CLS surveys are all listed on the Centre for Longitudinal Surveys website, so that if you look at the bibliography there, you can see who's doing what and where it's being published. And that's another way for the more general reader to find out what's been done without them actually having to get their hands on these huge data sets themselves.
Okay. And in terms of your own ongoing work, you know, if people express an interest in finding out more, you know, understand with the Institute of Education, there's a couple of resources. For example, the own blog.
Mm-hmm. There's a summary of this appears on the Institute of Education blog, the IOE blog, and there's also summaries of research on this Centre for Longitudinal Studies website.
Okay.
Press releases and things.
Mm-hmm. Heather, thank you so much for taking time out to speak to Radio EduTalk, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you very much.